Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Wednesday edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you for another hour of Preds Talk here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, joined in studio this evening by Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Adam, how we doing?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
Doing just fine. Wanted to start the show with nothing Preds-related. This is the first Preds Insider since Tuesday morning's devastation in North Nashville and Germantown and East Nashville and Mount Juliet, Donelson, Lebanon, Cookeville, and everywhere in the state of Tennessee. And just wanted to extend, at least for myself, I know you and everybody else in this fine city of ours, extend our thoughts and prayers to anyone who lost loved ones here this week in the tragic tornadoes of Tuesday morning. And also want to send thoughts and prayers to the people who were just outright affected, may have lost their life or you know, lost everything within their life, their house, any pets, whatever. Just an awful thing that that transpired in the wee hours of Tuesday morning, and want to extend all of our thoughts and prayers to everyone affected.
Absolutely. And I live in the downtown area, and fortunately for myself and my wife, we were spared. No damage. We haven't lost power. We're incredibly lucky, but we also don't live very far from Germantown.
Yep.
So we frequent a lot of the places, not just there, but also in East Nashville, that have been destroyed by this tornado. The one picture to me that circulated around social media that, you know, caught my attention more than any other was the picture of my dry cleaners, Music City Cleaners, which is in Germantown,
yep,
nearby First Horizon Park. The roof completely torn off of the dry cleaners. And I was there that day, Monday morning, before I went to Bridgestone Arena for the morning skate. I stopped by Music City Cleaners to pick up my dry cleaning. And
wow,
now it's gone. And that was an historic building. I don't know what was there before. It looks like a house that was repurposed into a dry cleaners. But, you know, to see a place like that that I was just at, you know, less than 24 hours before, completely gone. It's been really difficult to look at the images of homes and businesses that, you know, either I frequent, either businesses I frequent or homes where I know where they are, you know, to see them gone. It's very difficult. I'm glad that a lot of my friends in the city are okay. Mm-hmm. I do know people who have lost their homes, and it is difficult. And you know, my wife and I want to help in any way possible. And I know that here at the station, there are a lot of initiatives that are being undertaken to help those affected. And the station has done a really great job of alerting people to how they can help. So if you are interested in helping, I'm sure, Ryan, you have the information that people need in order to help those that have been hurt by this.
Yes. I think before I get to that, you mentioned establishments that you either frequent or have enjoyed. And Germantown and East Nashville certainly have a lot of those, not only for you, but a lot of people, including myself and my fiance. Boomba's Craft Pizza and a Tap House is a place that we have done this very show with Preds Insiders. And Boomba's was severely damaged within the Five Points area there in East Nashville. And I've actually been texting with the general manager here in the last couple of days, just offering any help that we can give them. Basically, his response was, rough situation, brother. We will rebuild and we will make it bigger and better. And that's been the sentiment of a lot of the establishment owners around town that that had their businesses affected. So, again, thoughts and prayers to everybody. And if you want to help, if you want to lend a helping hand, either monetarily or physical donations, first of all, HON.org, Hands on Nashville. That is a great resource to go and look at everything you can do to help this city of Nashville. For the station, you know, if you're going down to the Preds game tomorrow night down on the Arena Plaza at Bridgestone Arena from 5 to 7 p.m., we will be accepting donations for the Nashville Community Resource Center. And they are currently in need of the following items, and it's not limited to these items, but some of the more urgent items: work gloves, trash bags, batteries, flashlights, hand sanitizer. Fans can donate those items to the 102.5 The Game and 102.9 The Buzz tents outside Bridgestone Arena from 5 to 7 p.m. And if you aren't going down to the Preds game, you can donate any of those items or even more than that. Some of the bigger items like tarps, like rolled plastic, laundry detergent. A lot of different items are needed for these relief efforts, and you can bring those by our station, 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, out near the airport, and we will get those items into the hands of the people who need them the most here in this time. So that is beginning immediately. That is within business hours, 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., our station, again, here at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike in Nashville. And we'll be doing a whole lot more of different relief efforts here in the coming days and weeks, as this is going to be a long process for a lot of people in those areas that we described earlier this segment. So hope everyone can contribute in some fashion. And the hashtag of Nashville Strong has been circulating social media a lot. And if 2010 taught us anything about this city with the flood, is that this city comes together when the times are at its worst. And it's a really close-knit community, and I know this city is going to be even bigger, better, and stronger on the other side of all this.
Yes, absolutely. And I wasn't living here during the flood, but I've heard stories and I've read about what happened and how the city responded. So I'm confident that the same will occur this time. And I'm just glad that there haven't been more casualties than we've already seen. I believe the
right
death toll is at 25 now, mm-hmm. which is 25 too many.
Yes.
But at least it hasn't surged since then.
Agreed.
So, you know, I hope those who are listening who were in those areas are okay, that your family is okay, that your friends are okay. And we'll do our best, as the station has done over the past couple of days, to take your mind off of it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
By talking some sports. That's what we're here for.
I'm just passionate about sports, okay?
We are passionate about sports.
One of the infamous Adam Vingan quotes from his time on 102.5 The Game.
Yes. But I just want to help in any way that I can, and behind this microphone, the best way I know how is to talk about the Nashville Predators, who have not been playing well.
No, and last night they lose 3-1 on the road in Minnesota, and I'm going to be honest, Adam, watching that game, it didn't really feel important to me, kind of in the grand scheme of things of what we went through
mm-hmm.
in the wee hours of Tuesday. So just adding a little bit of perspective to... Yes, it's been an inconsistent roller coaster season, but there are a lot of people going through a lot worse things than what this hockey team is going through.
Yes.
But like you said, we will table a lot of the devastation talk and talk about some sports and some Preds to take people's minds off those things. And last night, this team loses 3-1, three straight losses after a miraculous victory last Thursday night against the Calgary Flames in comeback fashion. And three in a row all in regulation, leaving valuable points on the table as they have had these games in hand. Now the games in hand have been shrinking a little bit, and they have not been able to take advantage. They lose Saturday night in controversial fashion against Colorado. They lose Monday night in blowout fashion to Edmonton. And then last night, I would categorize it as, you know, just not a whole lot meat, not a whole lot of meat on that bone last night in Minnesota, the back half of a back-to-back, and didn't have a big push, at least to start. And the Minnesota Wild went up 2-0 and never looked back.
I believe it was John Hines. Well, it was John Hines, but I believe he said after the game that the first period of last night's game to him felt like a continuation of the third period of the game against Edmonton, which we know how that went.
It did consecutive goals to end the game for the Oilers.
It did not go well. But think about it this way. You mentioned the win against Calgary, which was a miraculous is a good way to describe it. That game should have been or felt like a springboard for this team. But to put it into perspective with how they've responded since then, the Predators were 0.1 second from losing four consecutive games in regulation. And you can talk about the call in the game against the Avalanche, Colin Blackwell, goaltender interference. We have talked about it. We know it was a bit of an iffy call, to put it mildly. But they did not win that game, even though I thought they actually played decent in that game. The game against Edmonton, we know how that went in the game last night. The Predators are still in this race. I mean, they're no longer in a playoff spot, which they had been for about a week, but they're still in the race. They still, I believe, control their own destiny. Of course, they're going to need help from the other teams around them in terms of losing, whether it's Winnipeg, Minnesota, Arizona. Those teams need to start losing points, or not picking up points, rather, and the Predators need to start gaining them. But you would think, and I thought, and I even wrote about this last week, that the way they won that game against Calgary, it almost made you feel like maybe this team had some of that 2017 magic in them. And it was just taking this long for them to find it, which was similar to what happened in 2017. Now, even players I talked to about that, in terms of whether or not they see any similarities or if that storyline that had been concocted was a bunch of rubbish, you know, they all said it's near impossible to compare the two teams just based on what stages of their careers they were at and the expectations on them. But the one thing the players did agree on was that at this time of the season 3 years ago, they were able to do enough to get into the playoffs and build some momentum, and that this team was trying to do the same thing. But, you know, it's fallen apart since then. And look, they could still make the playoffs. It seems like it's not as unrealistic as it seems, but you also have to put things into perspective, and it's just hard to trust this group. There's just something about them that doesn't give you the confidence that, even though they're still very much in the playoff race, that they're going to be able to figure it out in the next month enough to make the playoffs for the sixth year in a row.
There's something missing with this team when there shouldn't be something missing with this team.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I was thinking about, and I was thinking about this the other night, because as the Oilers were celebrating their 8-3 victory against the Predators, as the players were making their way to the bus, they played and won in Dallas last night, I saw James Neal walking down the hallway. And I'm thinking to myself that this team doesn't really, like, bear with me for a second, Ryan, because I was thinking about this, and I want you to tell me if this is far-fetched. The concept of glue guys is something that we talk about in sports. You hear it a lot in baseball, I think, and you hear it a lot in hockey, too.
I think you hear it a lot just in sports in general.
Yes, but it seems that in baseball and hockey, it's more prevalent than it is in football and basketball. But you know, there's that idea of glue guys. And I also just think that there needs to, that every team needs a jerk. And there are more explicit ways or inappropriate ways of saying that. But, you know, James Neal on the ice is a jerk. He plays tough. He's not afraid to push people around. He plays with an edge to his game. PK Subban, when he was here, early in the, you know, his first year, same sort of thing. You think about him basically taking on Sidney Crosby in the Stanley Cup final. He played like a jerk. He had that edge to him. And I think every team needs one of those players. Those, not a player who's going to go over the edge, but a player that's willing to creep up as close to the edge as possible and get into the other team's heads a little bit. I feel like since James Neal left, this team doesn't currently have one of those players. I'm wondering if you think that has anything to do with it. If you feel like there is that element missing from that dressing room, because there are a lot of good players, but you don't have that player that you look at who's not only talented, but the kind of player that can get other teams off their game.
All right. They didn't have James Neal in the President's Trophy season.
No.
And that team was damn good.
Yes.
That season.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are players who have that edge who haven't used that edge this season.
Okay. Who comes to mind?
Austin Watson.
Okay.
To be honest, Philip Forsberg. Philip Forsberg has I won't say a mean streak, but he has some grit in his game.
He does.
And we have not seen as much of that this season. Would you agree?
I would agree.
I think you could also look at Mattias Ekholm as someone who has played with a lot of that kind of spunk within his game, but maybe not as much this season for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with your point that maybe they are missing one of those guys.
Not specifically James Neal and
sure.
PK Subban, but someone who, like, I agree with you, Philip Forsberg. You know, when he's playing his best hockey, he's got some cockiness to him on
sure.
the ice. You know, I think of that. You know, there's an inappropriate term, blank eating grin that he gets when he's jostling with somebody. I remember writing a story about it at the beginning of last season that he gets that smile on his face, and I have to imagine that when you're on the other side of that, it can be incredibly aggravating. I remember specifically the moment I was thinking of. It was an early season game against Winnipeg, and Blake Wheeler and Philip Forsberg were battling. And after a stoppage in play, Wheeler's just getting in Forsberg's face and pushing him and pushing him, and Forsberg just has this grin on his face like, come on, mm-hmm. you can do better than that. And I think he drew a penalty on Blake Wheeler by doing that. And I talked to him about it. I remember I talked to Ryan Hartman about it because he is a player that no longer here but can also do the sort of the same thing. We haven't seen that from Philip Forsberg, that cockiness, that quiet confidence
sure.
in his game. So I agree with you about Philip Forsberg. I'm just wondering if they just don't have – this team just doesn't have an edge to it, I feel like, this year. I don't think this team is intimidating. You know, and they're not, and they weren't intimidating when they were good in the physical sense. But I just don't see any intimidation factor from this group this year.
No, that makes sense. And we also haven't seen much consistency out of their most important forwards this season. We'll address those performances coming up next when you look at Victor Arvidsson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson. That's coming up next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Kerry Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic this evening, taking you up until Smashville Live out at Drake's in Cool Springs. Tonight's star guest will be Titans punter and Preds fan Brett Kern. He will be joining Chase McCabe coming up at the top of the hour at Smashville Live at Drake's in Cool Springs. Should be a fun show hearing all about Brett Kern, how it's been with the Tennessee Titans. They had a great run in January, and also a big Preds fan. He had an experience with Fox Sports Tennessee last month as well. So it should be a lot of fun coming up at 7 p.m. Tomorrow night, the Preds host the Dallas Stars. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7 right here, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Adam, speaking of tomorrow night's game and moving forward, it feels like we've been saying this a lot when it comes to their star forwards. Victor Arvidsson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson. These are the most important forwards on this team. And at some point, if this team, A, wants to make the playoffs, and B, do damage in the playoffs, they have to get more out of those four guys.
Absolutely. And John Hines said a lot of very interesting things after the game on Monday. And he was honest, which is good. But the thing I was most struck by was actually something that wasn't about the Nashville Predators. It was about the Edmonton Oilers. It was about Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. Because, of course, they both had five-point games. Leon Draisaitl scored four goals. And John Hines was effusive in his praise of those players. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he talked about how when the pressure is on, those two rise to the appropriate level. And to me, and I'm not the only one who thought that, I think Darren talked about it in postgame. I know Robbie Stanley and I discussed it as well. That seemed like a, I don't want to say message, but we were all left wondering. I'm sure John Hines would have loved to be, would love to be able to say that about his star players, because we haven't seen it from them this year. And the thing I keep going back to is the goaltending has not been good this year overall. It's gotten better, Monday notwithstanding, but the goaltending has not been good all year. The top forwards haven't played well. You know, Roman Josi, if not for John Carlson, I think Roman Josi would be winning the Norris Trophy this year. Ryan Ellis, before his injury, was playing, I think, the best hockey he's ever played. Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, and Craig Smith have been one of the most productive lines in the NHL. If you could just get the goaltending right and the top forwards playing to their potential, this team would be in a lot more comfortable position in the playoff race. So kudos to them for being able to stay in it this long despite everything that's gone wrong with this group. But if this team makes the playoffs, or if this team wants to make the playoffs, they're going nowhere unless those players step up and deliver. And it's hard to figure out why. With the exception of Victor Arvidsson, I think Victor Arvidsson is obvious. You know, I do think that the injury that he sustained at the hands of Robert Bortuzzo has had a fairly significant effect on his season. The other ones, Duchene, Johansson, and Forsberg, it's harder to put a finger on why they are not performing how they should be performing and what their salaries demand how they should be performing.
Totally. And when you look at the four of them individually, you look at Victor Arvidsson. In his last 18 games, he has 3 goals and 4 points, playing better of late, but still not as productive as he has been in the previous 3 seasons. Matt Duchene, 5 points in his last 14 games. Philip Forsberg, 0 goals in his last 16 games. You know, we've all coined the month of February as Philbruary. He had 0 goals that month, which is just astonishing. Ryan Johansson, 10 points in his last 30 games. When you look at just those four, they have to get more. And yes, those are selective endpoints to show the lack of productivity out of those four, but still, those are the four that are going to be the collective straw that stirs the offensive drink. They can't just rely on Mikael Granlund or Rocco Grimaldi or Craig Smith to do all the goal scoring. Nick Bonino as well. Those four have got to get it going, and not just get it going for the next week. They have to get it going for the next 4 weeks, because when you look at this schedule, yes, Dallas the next couple games, then you have some Eastern Conference opponents, but overall, there is not another cupcake on this schedule for the rest of the way outside of a game against the LA Kings later this month. Whether it's East or West, they are playing teams that are either better than them or right with them in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, and I have the March schedule right now. 2 games upcoming against Dallas. Are they in third place currently? in the Central Division.
Yes.
A game against Montreal, a team that's likely to miss the playoffs, but a good team nonetheless.
Not an easy game.
Not an easy game, especially in Montreal. Toronto, a team that lost last night to the San Jose Sharks, but a team, as you mentioned, sort of right where the Predators are, battling for a playoff spot. Columbus gave them a game here a couple weeks ago. They play them on the road for the bus trip, by the way. How's that for sliding
yes,
in?
There you go.
For sliding in some promotion.
We will be in Columbus for that game, March 14th.
Minnesota the following night. We saw what happened last night. You have two games against the Philadelphia Flyers, who have been one of the best teams in the league over the past couple of months. Two games against the Colorado Avalanche, a gigantic game. I never thought I would say there would be a gigantic game in Glendale, Arizona in late March, but they will have one against the Coyotes. So really, other than the LA Kings, as you mentioned, there are no, for lack of a better term, gimme games on this schedule. And they have four more back-to-backs.
Yeah, and there are home games against Winnipeg and Minnesota, too.
Yeah, the last game of the season is against Minnesota. That could be a win and you're in, lose and you're out situation.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something.
But when you look at these four, Arvidsson, Duchesne, Forsberg, and Johansson, in a lack of productivity, I think there's a lot of Preds fans watching the game last night that couldn't help but think, what if when Kevin Fiala scores the nice goal to put Minnesota up 2-0, and the fact that Kevin Fiala is the first Minnesota Wild player to have five straight multi-point games, and he has 23 points in the last 15.
There are some interesting statistics about Kevin Fiala. First of all, he became the first player in Minnesota Wild history, I believe, to have five consecutive multi-point games.
Yeah, I just said that.
Yes. Sorry.
All good.
I was looking at other statistics. Okay, here we go. So now you know he's the first Minnesota Wild player to do that.
Yes.
He's also the third player this season to record multi-point games in five straight team games. The only other two to do so, Nikita Kucherov and Leon Draisaitl.
Wow.
Fiala also eclipsed the 50-point mark for the first time in his NHL career last night. He has 23 points since February 1st, which is the third most among all players over that span. So, he's doing very well for himself.
That's wild.
Anyway.
Keep going.
Look, there will be a lot of revisionist history about whether or not the Predators should have traded Kevin Fiala. When they traded Kevin Fiala for Mikhail Granlund last February, we knew how talented Kevin Fiala is and that one day he would put it all together. I even recall David Poile saying that he figured that one day Kevin Fiala would be a player who would play to this level, that he would figure it out. And if he does, then, you know, perhaps he'll look back on the trade in a different way. But at the same time, where the Predators were at that time, Mikhail Granlund made more sense for them because he's a better all-round player than Kevin Fiala. He's given responsibility in much more situations than Kevin Fiala.
And I think the unfortunate part is that we have not seen the full potential of Mikhail Granlund
until
John Hines took over as head coach, and there may only be 16 games left in Granlund's career with the Nashville Predators before he hits free agency this summer.
And remember that it wasn't always smooth sailing with Kevin Fiala this season. He was a healthy scratch earlier this season. And don't discount, we talk about the coaching change in Nashville, don't discount the coaching change in Minnesota when Dean Evason replaced Bruce Boudreau last month. Dean Evason, of course, the longtime coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, who was there when Kevin Fiala was there, and he had an interesting relationship with Kevin Fiala. I remember talking to Dean Evason a few years ago about Kevin Fiala when Kevin was first getting to the NHL on a full-time basis. And their relationship at times was rocky. Dean Evason had to administer some tough love, but Kevin figured it out. Dean helped him figure it out. And I think their relationship and Dean understanding Kevin and what Kevin needs to be a successful player, I think has had a lot to do with this. So we talk about the coaching change with Granlund, I think the coaching change in Minnesota with Fiala has had a similar effect.
Well put. Coming up next, I'm going to ask Adam a question that I don't think any of us really want to ask, but it may be becoming reality. That's coming up next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders live on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back to the show. Preds Insiders rolling right along here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan with you on this Wednesday evening. ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Preds back at it tomorrow night at home against the Dallas Stars. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard ESPN 102.5 The Game. The start of an important back-to-back with the Stars. They play in Dallas, a matinee game in Dallas on Saturday afternoon. And if you're going to the game tomorrow night, with everything going on in this city, with a lot of relief efforts for all the tornado devastation from early Tuesday morning, if you go down to the game tomorrow night and you're going to be going by the plaza, I invite everybody to go by and donate some key items for the Nashville Community Resource Center. We'll be taking those donations from 5 to 7 p.m. Look for the 102.5 The Game and 102.9 The Buzz tents on the plaza outside Bridgestone Arena. We are looking for the following items, not limited to, but these are the key items that the Community Resource Center needs in this time of need. Work gloves, trash bags, batteries, flashlights, and hand sanitizer. I cannot say hand sanitizer 10 times fast. But if you can donate any of those items, we will get those items to the people who need them the most, and it would certainly be appreciated in this dire time of need for a lot of people in Middle Tennessee. Adam teased before the break that I was going to ask you a question that I think a lot of people are uncomfortable asking in Smashville. Pecorine last night, I should say Monday night, gave up 8 goals, the most he's ever given up in his career. And we all know Pecorine this season has not been the old Pecorine. He's been more of old Pecorine. I was asked this question by somebody Monday night. I'm going to ask you this question. Was Monday night the end of the era of Pecorine being, quote, the guy between the pipes for the Preds?
Well, on Monday, I wrote a story that came out Monday morning where the headline was, are we witnessing the end of the Pecorine era in Nashville? And then he had the game that he did against the Oilers, and I followed that up with a story yesterday, which wasn't an easy story to write, admittedly, where the headline was, Pecorine isn't Pecorine anymore. And the pieces sort of worked together. I spoke to Pekka on Saturday before the game against Colorado, and he understands that there's been a change in his role. It's not going to change the fact that he is going to offer as much support to UC Saros as he can in a situation that UC has never been in before as an NHL goaltender starting a majority of games. And Pekka, being the consummate team player, said that I will do whatever is best for the team. And for the first time in more than 10 years, it seems that what is best for the team is Pecorine not getting the majority of the starts. And I wrote this in the story I mentioned yesterday, that it was uncomfortable to watch that third period against Edmonton. And the issue with goaltenders, and it happens with any sport where you have an individualized position, like a pitcher or a quarterback. I feel like you can lump goaltender into that as well, where their statistics are heavily reliant on the play of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at a goaltender's goals against average or a save percentage or what have you, it's not always a total reflection of the goaltender himself. Pecorine is not responsible for all 8 goals that were scored against him on Monday night. But the one thing that I go back to is this, especially for Pecorine, for as long as he's been at the top of his game, part of a goaltender's responsibility is to compensate for his team's mistakes.
And that's why he always had the nickname the Eraser. is because he erased a lot of the mistakes that were in front of him, especially early in his career.
So instead of erasing those mistakes, he's been compounding them. When there's been a breakdown and they need a save from him, more often than not, they haven't gotten it. You know, I was taken aback by some of the statistics that I looked up ahead of this story, and I like to use a lot of fancy stats, two of which are goals saved above average and goals saved above expectation, which are they're difficult to explain in a short amount of time. But basically, goals saved above average, for example, is looking at a specific goaltender's play and comparing it to that of the quote-unquote league average goaltender.
Okay.
So how many goals above a league average goaltender has Pecorine saved this year? And that number for him is one of the worst in the league. So that's a fancy way of saying that Pecorine has been a below average goaltender this year, which you can tell based on his traditional statistics as well.
To your point about the third period specifically, Monday night, the five goals in five plus minutes, whatever it was for the Oilers, where it was an avalanche that just did not stop.
That was Saturday.
See? moving on. It felt like an avalanche Saturday, or you got me, Monday night. And the sixth and seventh goals are ones that stand out as moments of reality finally setting in, at least for me,
mm-hmm.
that it might be over, that it probably is over.
And why were those two goals specifically?
The Zach Cassian goal.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like Pecorine had any reason not to stop that puck.
No.
And it went in.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the seventh one was the Leon Draisaitl hat trick goal where he scored five hole on Pekka.
From the left circle. On a fairly routine shot. It wasn't anything fancy.
And Pecorine just looked slow mm-hmm. in terms of trying to get down in the butterfly position to stop that puck.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that not every goal that he gave up was his fault. But man, in that third period, it definitely felt like a moment in Pecorine's career that unfortunately we're going to look back on as a key moment in him no longer being the old Pecorine.
And I really do think, I've been around Pecorine now for close to 5 years, and I have never seen him like this. We're just talking personality-wise. He's still an incredibly friendly individual, but he's a bit more subdued. He seems a bit deflated.
And we all know he takes his personal success personal.
Yes.
When he doesn't perform well, he takes it hard, and he feels like he lets his teammates down almost every single time.
Yes. So I have not seen him this down on his luck in 5 years. And he's had some rough games in big moments. We think of Game 7 against Winnipeg. We think of Game 5 against Pittsburgh. But that game on Monday, based on goals against, was the worst performance of his career. And he seems to me to be grappling with his career mortality. I think more so than ever, he is coming to the realization that his career really is in its final stages, and I think it's bothering him that it's happening like this.
Were you surprised that John Hines kept him in as long as he did?
I was. And I asked him after the game why it took him until 8 goals, and he said at that time, I think enough was enough, and I should have followed up with why wasn't 6 enough or right. 7 enough?
Right. I was surprised by that. I was also surprised that John Hines did not take a timeout after it was 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Tippett, to his credit, in the second period when the Preds scored twice in, what was it, 14 seconds?
Yep, took that timeout.
Went from 2-0 Oilers to 2-2. Dave Tippett took the timeout, and the tides turned at that point within the second period. I was surprised John Hines didn't try to do the same. When the Oilers go up 5-3, it still felt like kind of a wide-open game where, yes, you're down 5-3, but if you get one more, who says you can't get a fifth one to tie it up?
Right.
But it just kept going downhill.
Yeah. John Hines has been more liberal. No, liberal is not the right word. He's been willing to use his timeouts more so than Peter LaViolette, I think. Peter LaViolette's response to trouble is to just pull the goaltender. Mm-hmm. John Hines, I think, has been giving his goaltenders a little bit of a longer leash, but it was uncomfortable. I was sitting with Robbie downstairs in the media room during the third period. I think after the sixth goal, I said to Robbie, like, you got to take him out. And then the seventh goal, I said, why aren't they digging him out? And then the eighth goal, I get really bad secondhand embarrassment. It was physically uncomfortable near the end of that period. I mean, or at least the end of Pecorino's time in that game.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like a throw in the towel kind of moment for him. And luckily, they mercifully removed him after that.
So through 66 games, where do the Preds stand in the wild card hunt in the Western Conference? We'll get to that next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5. The game streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5. The game, Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Here on this Wednesday evening, taking you up until Smashville Live at the top of the hour, Chase McCabe will be joined by Titans punter Brett Kern. Should be a fun show at Drake's in Cool Springs coming up here in just a few minutes. But tomorrow night, the Preds host the Dallas Stars. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. A key game within the wild card chase for the Nashville Predators. What game isn't a key game at this point for the Preds, who have lost 3 in a row following last night's loss in Minnesota by a score of 3-1 to the Wild? With that loss, the Preds now trail Minnesota by 1 point on the outside of the playoff picture. The Canucks and Jets are tied at 74 points apiece in the first and second wild card spots in the Western Conference. They each have 74, the Wild have 73, and the Preds are tied with the Coyotes at 72. And just like 2 days ago, it felt like the Preds had 10 games in hand on the Arizona Coyotes, and now they only have one game in hand on the Coyotes, and they are tied at 72 points. And these last three games, this team, the fact that they have not gathered a single point, let alone a win, has really put a dent in their hunt for the wild card. It's not over. They can still, you know, in these last 16 games, perhaps win 10 of 16, throwing an overtime loss in there, and they're right there within the hunt still in the Western Conference. But there is still a lot of work to do against really tough teams, and it starts tomorrow night against the Stars, or continues tomorrow night against the Stars.
And they haven't seen the Stars since January 1st.
Yes.
Which was sort of a watershed moment for the Nashville Predators. I think watershed might be a positive connotation, but it was a significant moment.
It was. And
for the Nashville Predators.
There was a game against the Stars at home in December.
On my wedding night.
On your wedding night, you were not there.
No.
But it had a similar feel of doom and gloom following that game, where Peter LaViolette put the team's effort into question, and that was right before the really good Eastern Conference swing right before the holidays. But the Stars have been a thorn in the Preds' side. This is the team that beat them in the playoffs last year in the first round in 6 games and have taken the first 2 games of this regular season series thus far. You mentioned the first game since the Winter Classic. It's also the first game since Corey Perry elbowed Ryan Ellis in the head in the first period of that game. Corey Perry was suspended, but Ryan Ellis missed a lot more time than Corey Perry missed out of that play. Do you feel like there's any retribution coming for Corey Perry?
You know what? I think about it the same way I did about when the Predators played the Blues for the first time with Robert Bortuzzo in the lineup and Victor Arvidsson back in the lineup. And Robbie and I talked about this on the Smash Brothers, which you can hear every Friday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Plug.
On ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Plug.
We talked about this, about whether or not there would be any sort of retribution. And we thought maybe the teams were too far removed from the initial incident for it to really matter. But there was. You know, Jared Tenorti took up for Victor Arvidsson. Victor Arvidsson got in the face of Robert Bortuzzo
multiple times.
So, yes, it's been 2+ months since the Winter Classic. But if Ryan Ellis sees Corey Perry open for an open ice hip check, I think he's going to go for it. I don't know if Ryan Ellis is the kind of guy who's going to get in Corey Perry's face, but if he can lay a nice solid check on him and the opportunity presents itself and he's not going looking for it, he's going to do it for
now,
sure.
Now, with the media, when Ryan Ellis first returned from the concussion, he took the high road with the whole situation. The fact that it was a bang-bang play, he knows why Corey Perry was in the situation that he was in, or in the position he was in, excuse me. But it would not surprise me to see the bearded one get in the face of Corey Perry tomorrow night. It would not surprise me whatsoever, especially if things get heated between the two teams like they typically can, especially here in the last couple of years. Would not be surprised to see that from Ryan Ellis.
No, I wouldn't. And Ryan Ellis isn't afraid to get in somebody's face. So I'm very curious to see how that goes. But the flip side of that, of course, is that the Predators need to make sure that if they decide to take up for Ryan Ellis in any form or fashion, that it doesn't put them at a disadvantage, because the most important thing is winning the game, as it was when they played St. Louis and they won both of those games. Now, perhaps there's enough animosity, as I think there was against the Blues in those two games, that the Predators can use that as fuel to win these two games. It's very possible. The blueprint is there from a few weeks ago. But the Predators, every game at this point is not a must-win game, obviously, not yet, but it's starting to feel that way.
It totally feels that way.
The Predators have lost three consecutive games in regulation. They have, what, 17 games left?
Or 16.
They have 16 games left. How many games do you think the Predators can go out of 16 without picking up a point to legitimately make the playoffs?
Five?
Maybe even less. Four?
If they go 10-5-1.
You think they're in?
That would be 21 points, and they would be at 97.
Okay, that probably gets them in.
Right? No. Yeah. 21 points, they'd be at 93. Excuse me.
That's still on the bubble.
That's on the bubble.
Yeah, they might.
Maybe four. Maybe they have to go 10-4-2.
I think they have no more than four regulation losses left to give to keep themselves in this race.
Against stiff competition.
Against stiff competition. And that's not going to be easy. But they have to find a way to do it. And the nice thing about this question is we can go to our friends at Sports Club Stats that tell us that, for example, what did you say? 10-4-2?
Mm-hmm.
A 10-4-2 record, according to Sports Club Stats, gives the Predators a 96.4% chance of making the playoffs.
And that would be 94 points. What about 93 points?
93 points, 10-5-1, 89.7, 9-4-3, 87%. And then it drops down from there. 92 points, 9-5-2, 72.3%. 10-6, 76.8%. 8-4-4, 67.8%.
We need to look at 94 as kind of the magic number.
Possibly 93. I think 93 is the absolute least. I think 10-5-1 or 9-4-3 is the absolute worst they can go in order to make the playoffs, just based on what we're looking at here.
We know this team is capable of that.
Yeah, we've just seen them go 10-4-1
right
after the game against Calgary. I think they were 10-4-1 in their previous 15 games. So we know they can, but there is almost no margin for error at this point. I mean, I will give them four regulation losses in the last month of the season to keep them in the race to get to the playoffs. That's where they've put themselves.
Tall task.
Yes, very.
Very much a tall task. Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining me, as always, in studio. I had a lot of fun talking Preds with you, and hopefully this took a lot of people's minds off everything that's going on in our great city.
Of course, and to all of those listening who have been affected, we're thinking of you, and we will help you in any way we can.
Well said. For Adam Vigan of The Athletic, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks for listening to Preds Insiders. Coming up next, it is Smashville Live, followed by Penalty Box Radio at 8. Keep it locked right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game.